And now as we move into the 31st chapter, we see that the stage is set for David to become king. All that remains now is for Saul to die. And we're going to have that account now in this chapter as Saul engages in the battle with the Philistines, which will be his final battle. Not only will Saul die, but his three sons will be put to death. And the throne will be vacated and ready then for David to be able to move in and have his rightful place as the truly anointed and God-approved king of Israel. So as David is conquering and being more than a conqueror, we see that Saul at the same time is being defeated and worse than a captive. Possibly even on the same day that David gets the victory over the Amalekites, Saul has the defeat by the Philistines. It has been a long wait and a long struggle for David over a period of years, waiting to have his rightful place as the king of Israel. But God, by his divine providence, does work things out. And we see how that in the case of David and Saul, God duly rewards good and right, and he also punishes wickedness and evil. Now, verse 1 of chapter 31, "Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa." So we see here where the Philistines definitely do prevail. Either they are better commanded, or they have more vigor and more interest in the battle, or they are superior soldiers. We're not given the exact reason why they were able to prevail, but of course we know underlying it all is that Saul has been sinning. Saul has not been pleasing to God, and the men that have been with him chasing after David, trying to put David to death, are also men who are not pleasing to God, and consequently they do not have God on their side. So they fall down slain in Mount Gilboa. The Philistine army greatly overcomes the army of the Israelites. "And the Philistines followed hard upon Saul and upon his sons. And the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Melishua, Saul's sons." So three of Saul's sons are put to death here. And we're sad to learn of the death of Jonathan. Jonathan was a very noble person. He was a close friend of David. And he was as much a friend and benefactor to David as Saul was an enemy to David. He tried to negotiate between David and Saul. He tried to do everything in his power to have things work out well for David. And he fully looked to the fact that David would be king. We cannot give a full explanation for why Jonathan was allowed to die at this time and in this manner. But we have to bear in mind that the manner of a person's death does not tell us anything about their spiritual state, about what's going to happen to them in the life after this one. We do know that the death of these three sons of Saul would help to clear the way for David to take the throne. For Saul had one other son left, Ishbosheth, and this son made a claim upon the throne, and he reigned in name only for a period of about 2 years and was a problem so far as the reign of David was concerned. And certainly had a man of Jonathan's caliber, of his great stature, been alive and had some kind of a legal claim upon the throne, even though he might not have wanted to take it, there would have been many, many people who would have supported him to have been king rather than to have given David the throne. So this did clear the way for David, for these three sons to be slain at this time. Verse 3, "And the battle went sore against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was sore wounded of the archers." So Saul is wounded in the battle. He no longer is able to effectively fight, or maybe he cannot even effectively take flight now. And so he realizes that they're going to find him, and they're going to eventually put him to death. So verse 4, "Then said Saul unto his armor-bearer, Draw thy sword, and thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me." So Saul didn't want to be killed by the Philistines. He didn't want to be abused by them as Samson had been. So he tells his armor-bearer to kill him with his own sword. But his armor-bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. Now, the man was afraid to kill Saul. Not that he was afraid of death, not that he was afraid of even using his sword, but it was possibly because he had so much respect for his king that he did not want to be the one actually responsible for his death. Therefore, Saul took a sword and fell upon it. So here we see the end of Saul. He took a sword and fell upon it. A very inglorious, dishonorable way to die. This follows along with one of the prophecies of David at a time when David could have killed Saul himself, but refused to do so. In chapter 26, verse 10, David says, "As the Lord liveth, the Lord shall smite him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall descend into battle and perish." So David said this: one of three things are going to happen. The Lord's going to smite him, or he's going to die like a natural death, or he shall descend into battle and perish. Well, we see here that he did die, actually as a result of battle, but his own sword was what finally snuffed out his life. And this is a time of earthly judgment for Saul. Here he had refused to put the Amalekites to death like God had ordered him to do, and he also was even equally guilty of the blood of those 85 priests that were slain. This is all coming to bear now in Saul's situation, and he was also guilty of wanting to shed the blood of David, which he was not able to do, but yet in his heart he had already done it. So this man who had such potential for good, but who simply did not obey God, ends up with a very shameful death. Verse 5, "And when his armor-bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword and died with him." So the armor-bearer dies the very same way that Saul does. When he sees that Saul is dead, then he also falls upon his sword and dies with him. And the tradition of the Jews is that this armor-bearer was Doeg, the Edomite. And we know that Doeg was the one that actually carried out the death of those 85 priests at Nob, which Saul ordered to be slain. But whether this was actually Doeg or not, we do not know. However, we do know that he was very faithful to Saul, with him in life, and in wanting to join him in death. Verse 6, "So Saul died, and his three sons and his armor-bearer, and all his men, that same day together." So the army is not only routed, not only overpowered, but the vast majority of them were actually put to death. "And when the men of Israel that were on the other side of the valley, and they that were on the other side of Jordan, saw that the men of Israel fled, and that Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook the cities and fled, and the Philistines came and dwelt in them." So the battle now is muchly in favor of the Philistines, such a great victory that those that lived round about in the cities of the Israelites fled and deserted their cities and let the Philistines come in and dwell in them. And Samuel had so prophesied that if the people did not obediently follow after God, even though they had the king, that they would have a bad end. In 1 Samuel chapter 12, verse 25, he says, "But if ye shall still do wickedly, ye shall be consumed, both ye and your king." So having a king was not a reason for disobeying God. He said, "If ye shall still do wickedly, ye shall be consumed, both ye and your king." And here we can see where they definitely were consumed. Again, this is spoken of in Hosea 13, verse 10 and 11. "I will be thy king, whereas any other that may save thee in all thy cities, and thy judges of whom thou saidest, give me a king and princes. I gave thee a king in mine anger, and took him away in my wrath." So that's the way that Hosea spoke of this. They were given a king because they wanted a king in the place of God's judges. They wanted a king in the place of Samuel and also in the place of God himself. He gave them a king in his anger, but he took the king away in his wrath. And here we read about it in the death of Saul, the fall of his three sons and his armies, and the conquering of that area and those cities by the Philistines. Verse 8, "And it came to pass on the morrow, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, they found Saul and his three sons fallen in Mount Gilboa." So we see here that it was not until the next day that the Philistines came and actually found the bodies of Saul and his three sons. Had Saul not been so badly wounded that he was going to die anyway, he might have made an escape. His armor-bearer could have better served him if he had not have killed himself, if he had remained alive and attended to Saul and his sons, at least attended to the bodies of the sons and maybe helped Saul to escape or at least have given him a decent burial. But in his terror, and in Saul's terror, they killed themselves, not knowing that they had till the next day before the Philistines would even find them. So they found them, fallen in Mount Gilboa, and they cut off his head and stripped off his armor and sent into the land of the Philistines round about to publish it in the house of their idols and among the people. So they did this very great indignity to Saul. They had his death now for sure, had cut off his head, and so they made a big effort to publish it in the house of their idols and among the people. That is, they were going to give credit and glory and honor to their idolatrous gods for having gotten the victory over Saul, rather than to realize the truth here, that this was simply the righteous retribution of the true and living God against Saul and those that were disobedient, and he used the Philistines as an instrument, as a tool, to bring this about. But you can see what gleeful joy the Philistines had in spreading this news of the death of Saul. It was published in the house of their idols. That is, this would be one of the public places that news could be spread easily, and then it was spread among the people. They sent the news back to the land of the Philistines. We've now conquered Saul. We've now overthrown this nation of Israel. It is now ours. We have no further hindrance to our occupying this land. And of course, at this time, they were not realizing that David was going to occupy this throne, and that David was going to successfully defend the land against them. We will close our lesson at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.